and welcome to Inside the Winner's Circle. I'm your host, Joyce Bone, and today we're going to have a conversation with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra Concertmaster, David Coucheron. Welcome to the show, David. How are you?
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It really is. Let me read to y'all a little bit about David, and you can be as impressed as I am. David Coucheron joined the ASO, the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, as concertmaster in September 2010. At age 27, the Norwegian violinist is the youngest concertmaster among any major U.S. orchestra. So you need to tune in to hear about his previous experiences that led him to Atlanta and what it's like being a member of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and to learn more about the person behind the music. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more. As I said, he's originally from Norway, but he's worked with conductors such as Robert Spano, Alan Gilbert, Michael Thomas, Simon Rattle, just a lot of different people. And he's worked with the orchestras, including the BBC Symphony Orchestra, the Bergen Philharmonic Orchestra, the Sendai Symphony, and the Oslo Philharmonic Orchestra, and Trondheim Symphony Orchestra. He's played solo recitals at the Oslo Chamber Music Festival, Carnegie Hall, Wigmore Hall in London, the Kennedy Center, the Olympic Winter Games in Salt Lake City, Utah, as well as Beograd, Serbia, and Shanghai, China. Mr. Coucheron's chamber music performances have included appearance at Suntory Hall, Wigmore Hall, the Oslo Chamber Music Festival, and Alice Tully Hall. His recordings with his sister and pianist, Julie Coucheron, include David and Julie and Debut. Some of his awards and recognitions are the first prize at the Concorso Internacional de Musica. That was the competition in 2009 in Italy, first prize in the Princess Astrid competition in 2002 in Norway, and third prize at the Manchester International Violin Composition in 2005. And Mr. Coucheron plays a 1725 Stradivarius. Welcome again to the show.
Thank you.
We are very, very excited to have you here, and we decided to bring in some co-hosts for this show. So I'd like to introduce to everybody Alex Bone, my son, and Brett Jones, good friend of Alex and the Bone family. Welcome, guys.
Hey. Hello. Thank you for bringing me here, Mom.
Well, why don't y'all talk about why you're here, who you're representing, and then we'll get going.
Me and Brett play the viola.
At Pinckneyville Orchestra with our teacher, Miss Pittman, and all our orchestra members. So,
Where is Pinckneyville?
Atlanta, Norcross, Auburn.
So it's Pinckneyville Middle School in Norcross, Georgia. So welcome to the show, guys, and we're happy to have you as co-host today. I'm going to jump in and go ahead and ask David, you know, about being the concertmaster of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. What exactly does that mean, David? What's a concertmaster?
It's a fairly long job description, but reality is, every day is, I'm kind of the shoulder of the orchestra. In Europe, the concertmaster position is called the leader of the orchestra. And that's pretty much what I do. We have a lot of guest conductors come in, and I serve as the link often between the orchestra and the conductor.
Okay. So you kind of keep everybody connected.
Yes, that's pretty much.
Keep things running smoothly.
That's big part of it. I also, I'm the leader of the first violin section. And I also have to go through all the parts very carefully, months in advance of any concert, to make sure everything is correctly done, and then it gets copied out to everybody else in the orchestra. So that's also a big part of the job.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. They should share that. I think that's a big job.
Yeah, people think all I have to do is get up and tune the orchestra and
right.
find out that's it, but there's a lot more work than just doing that.
That's right. So we had the privilege of seeing you perform in December, and it was very, very good job. We really enjoyed it, didn't we, Alex?
It was really, really amazing.
All right. So, Alex, you have a question for us.
Sarah Du asks, when and how did you get your Stradivarius?
Basically, Stradivariuses are extremely rare and extremely expensive. So for normal musicians, it's almost impossible to buy one unless you come from a very rich family. So what happens often is that big companies or foundations, they would buy these instruments and as an investment, and they would give them out to musicians. And fortunately, there is a great foundation in Norway that bought a bunch of good instruments, and they let me play on one of them, which is the Stradivarius. And that started about 4 or 5 years ago.
So they give it to you on loan.
On loan, yes.
And then you take very good care of it.
I take excellent care of it, yeah. It goes with me everywhere, and I don't leave it anywhere.
Wow. I guess you can't leave it in the car. That wouldn't be good for it in the Georgia heat.
No, and it's not insured in the car either, so I can't take it with me. Yeah.
That's a big responsibility right there.
It is. It changed a big part of my life. You know, I can't really bring the violin after a concert or go to a restaurant or something like that. I have to go home first and leave it.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting. All right, Brett, how about you?
Corey Reyes wants to know, if you weren't a successful musician, what would you be in some other job choices you'd consider?
When I was little, I wanted to be a doctor like my father. But if I had a chance to be anything and for some reason I couldn't play the violin, I would want to be my childhood dream, which is a fighter pilot.
Oh, that's a cool one. Sweet. What kind of doctor is your father?
He's a specialized psychiatrist.
Very nice.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Okay. So what do you enjoy most about being a member of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra?
I think the best part of it is being able to collaborate with Robert Spano, the music director, and also everybody in the orchestra who are such fine musicians. And it's really a great joy for me to be able to work with them every day on a consistent basis. I really, really enjoy that.
Mm. So it's not, does it ever feel stressful? Because it's such beautiful music. It seemed like, I guess there's an element of stress can come in. But
it can be stressful, and there are a lot of things I have to juggle in my head all at once sometimes. And everything happens really quickly. You know, it's like driving on a highway. It doesn't take much before you end up somewhere you don't want to be.
Right.
I really enjoy it. And, you know, when we complete a good concert, and you have just such a nice feeling afterwards of achieving something wonderful with so many other wonderful musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Someone in 6B named Christina Wind wanted to know, can you play any other instruments beside the violin?
Absolutely not.
Really?
No, I had to take some piano in school, but I'm a terrible pianist, and I can. I can't sing. I really can't do anything else than violin, really. My sister's a pianist, and, you know, whenever I was a kid and I was trying to practice piano, she would just get insanely jealous and told me to stop. So I just kept to the violin. And
there you go. Yeah, and that's that sibling rivalry coming through.
Yes, absolutely.
That happens to the best of us. I mean, my older sister's a nurse, and when I went to college, I was like, they were going over choices, and I was like, no, I can't be a nurse because my sister's a nurse. And it was just off the table completely.
Yeah, piano was definitely off the table when I was a kid. Yeah.
And she's pretty good, so.
Yeah, I let her handle the piano part and I'll handle the violin part. And it worked out well so far.
Yeah,
so,
that's nice. That's nice. Okay, so who do we leave off with? Your turn, Brett?
Yes. Solomon Demisi wants to know, who was your teacher when you first started to learn how to play the violin?
I was 3 years old when I started playing the violin, and his name was Kåre Fuglesang, and he was an old man from the Oslo Philharmonic, and I owe him very, very much because he got me started on the violin, and he got me started off to a very good start. So he taught me very many basic good things, because when you start playing the violin, it's very important you get off in the right direction, and I owe him a great deal for that.
He built your love for it rather than turning you off to it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things he said, and I still, you know, do this every day, and I think of it every day, is that he said, to play violin is a research, and you have to research it every day. And you have to look at it that way. You know, you always can find something better. You know, he was 75 years old. He played for 70 years old, and he was every day trying to research how to improve his violin skills, and that's very important to remember.
Sounds like people who enjoy playing the violin are kind of lifelong learners.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're always learning.
Yeah, and it's very important to keep that attitude. You know, no matter how good you are at whatever you're doing, you need to be able to realize that you can always do it better.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. I tried to take my oldest son, Griffin, when he was 5, I had like a free lesson or something, and I took him to try the violin, and the lady was like, I don't think so by the end of it, because he was like, you know, a big puppy and big paws, and he just wasn't conducting himself, I guess.
That means he didn't like it.
I think he was trying to play it like a guitar, but, you know.
Don't be so soft, Mom.
Okay, I'll try not to be. But he likes to play guitar now, so it worked out.
That's good.
As part of being the concert master, you get to perform as a soloist with the orchestra every year. What's it like being able to stand up and perform in front of your peers and the Atlanta audiences? And what are you performing this year?
This year, I have already performed once, which was the Brahms Double Concerto, and I did that with the principal cellist, Christopher Rex. I did that in the fall, and in the end of May, I am performing the Sibelius Violin Concerto, which I very much love. It's one of my favorite concertos, and I'm very much looking forward to that.
Okay, May. Do you know the date yet, the exact date?
Yeah, it's end of May. It is the whole week at the end of May.
Okay,
yeah.
So we'll have to go and see that. So
that'd be great.
We will commit to coming
it
and
see. It is a little tricky, you know, standing in front of your colleagues, and all of a sudden you're going to have to, you know, play a solo and stuff. But one of the duties of the concertmaster is also to play concertmaster solos. Sometimes in the music there's going to be a line that's just for me that I have to play all by myself. Mm-hmm. So it's not too different from every week. Yeah.
You've been playing a long time. Does that get easier in time, or?
It changes, but very slowly. You know, the duties that I have when I was 5 and I was 10, it's different than what it is now, but it's important to keep the focus on, you know, playing, and I love playing the violin, and I love playing music, and that has never changed, so.
Very nice.
Jerry Liu asked you, who is your favorite violinist?
My favorite violinist, that's difficult to say, because I have different favorite violinists when it depends on, it comes all down to which composer is being played. I have different favorite violinists. But I think that overall, when I was a kid, I was growing up, his name was Jascha Heifetz. And I think overall, he's the guy that has inspired me the most when it comes to violin.
That kind of answers one question, actually. Brianna Howe is asking, what are some advantages to being the concertmaster?
As opposed to being in a section, or?
Well, to the whole orchestra, I guess.
To the whole orchestra? I wouldn't say advantages. It's just the different tasks that I have to complete than the rest of the people in the orchestra. It's more different than it seems like. You know, we're all playing the same music, but I have to do a lot of other things that the people in the rest of the people in it simply don't have to do.
He gets extra work.
Yeah, I had to sit home a lot and go through music and prepare extremely well for every rehearsal and every concert. That includes, you know, listening to different recordings of the same piece, so I get an idea of, you know, how different people interpret this, because when a conductor comes on the podium, I have to be ready for whatever he's going to be doing. And it may be different from person to person and symphony to symphony. So there's a lot of preparation that goes into that one rehearsal that happens. So the first rehearsal of the week is always on a Tuesday, so Sunday and Monday are actually the most busiest day for me.
Yes. Does it feel good to be the concertmaster?
Yeah, I really enjoy it. It wasn't what I thought I was going to, you know, when I was 3 years old, that's not what I had in mind. I had no idea what was going to happen, and I didn't know I was going to be living in Atlanta. It's far away from Norway. But I really enjoy what I do, and I hope I can spread that joy around to the rest of the people in the orchestra.
So how do you become a concertmaster?
That's a very good question. You should ask the people who hired me. But I think you have to be, you have to have a certain level of playing. But I think also you have to have a certain people skills, because you have to deal with a lot of people in different situations. Hopefully, so far it's been working out really well for me, and I like it.
That's great. And I think that's the core element in most successes, that you have to have very strong people skills.
Yeah.
You know, that is something that will serve you well your whole life.
Absolutely.
Are you, Madeline Shepherd asks, are you or have you been afraid when you perform in front of people? And when you do, how do you get over that stage fright?
Yes, I think everybody that's been on stage and performed for thousands of people are going to have some kind of stage fright, some part of their lives, yeah. But as with everything else, it's something that you get used to. And it's something that you have to just realize is part of the job, that you're going to have to be able to stand there and expose yourself in front of thousands of people. And I think for me, what I've been spending a lot of time is to change the way I think of something. To be standing on stage, instead of thinking, you know, they're there to see if I'm going to make a mistake, they're actually, the audience are there to have a wonderful experience and enjoy the music I'm playing. So I'm going to have to think of that and try to give them the best possible experience they can. And when I focus 100% on that, the stage fright does not exist anymore.
Right. Because it's not about you. It's about them.
It's about them, but it's also about giving them the experience that they are there to. They're mm-hmm. there to actually to realize.
I do a lot of public speaking, so that's like what I tell myself before I go out in front of everybody is they want you to do well because they've given their time and money to be there in your presence. So as long as you keep the focus on them and not on yourself, then...
And also when you do things a lot, you get used to it and you get a good feel for it. So it's a work in progress. And, you know, every musician in the world has been scared one time or the other on stage and been nervous. But it's just something that you're going to have to deal with and get over.
Right. It just kind of makes you bring your A game, right?
Yes. And sometimes being nervous is good. It sharpens you up. It makes you quicker. It makes your response. It makes you think quicker. And to turn that negative thing, which a lot of people think being nervous is a negative thing, turn it into something positive. It's also very important to change that around. It's a good thing to be nervous. If you're not nervous for a performance, you're not excited, mm-hmm. which, you know, you should be excited.
Exactly. That's a great point. I like to drive that home with my kids. Like, if you're feeling nervous, that means something great is about to happen.
Well, hopefully, yeah.
Hopefully. And overall experience, I'm going to stick with that. So how much do you practice? And you say, you know, you kind of touched on the fact that you prepare on Sunday and Mondays. You know, kind of take us through your process of preparing.
Well, preparing for an orchestra concert is different than from a solo concert. Because from an orchestra perspective, I have to edit the parts very carefully. And I don't really have to do that with the solo because I'm the only one that's going to be using the parts. And so for orchestra, I get the music months and months in advance. I edit everything in so it's clear for the people behind me what's going to happen. And then the librarian copies it out to the rest of the orchestra. And then a couple of weeks in advance of the performance again, I come back and I revisit the piece and I really study and learn it. For solo performances, it usually takes a little bit longer time. I would start learning something, you know, half a year in advance, a year in advance, depending on the piece. And I would... I'm a very big fan of not practicing unless I really want to practice, because I think if you practice or you work and you're not really enjoying what you're doing, it's not getting any better. So if you're not going to improve by doing or practicing, there's no point in saying, I practiced 10 hours today. If it's not going to get any better, you might as well take a walk or do something else, you know? Mm-hmm. So I try to practice very efficiently when I practice. And if I feel like I'm not getting anything out of it, I stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's very important to focus and see the results immediately when you practice. If not, then you just, you know, treading water is not getting any better.
Just doing time.
Yeah. I don't practice too much ever. It's not because I don't like practicing. I just, you know, with everything, if you don't enjoy what you're doing, you're not paying attention to it and it's not going to get any better.
So if you get a new piece that you're preparing for, do you seek outside assistance at all from other people? Or is it always just that you have so much experience at this point that you work through it yourself?
No, I definitely seek outside experience. I try to listen to as many recordings as I can to have a broad field of understanding of the music, have other people interpret it so I can, you know, make my own interpretation. Sometimes I call my old teachers and be like, hey, you know, what do you think of this? How do you feel about this piece? You know, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? But ultimately, I'm going to have to make a decision on how I want to do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, for me, it's a process that takes a while. It's not something that happens instantly. It's like, you know, sculpture. You have to shape it over time, and it takes a while.
You haven't seen our sculpture. Right, Alex? do you have a question, Alex?
Lindsay Rogers asked you, on your road to success, what do you think is the most important thing to remember?
For me, I think patience is very important to remember. With violin, there's a lot of small details and meticulous work that has to be done. And sometimes it's not fun. When I was, you know, 7 years old and everybody was out playing soccer and I had to go home and play violin, it's not easy. But I was very patient, and I got a lot of help from my parents, and I think that's very important to remember. I think the other thing that's important to remember is every step that you improve to, that you don't rest, that you keep saying that you can get better. You never say this is good enough, or, you know, you can say that this performance was good, but it could be better. And I think that's one of the interesting things about music, because there is no right way to play it. There is no wrong way to play it. It's music, but everything that you're playing, it can always be improved. And I think that's important to remember. No matter like how successful you get, things can always get better.
Excellent.
Rachel Adams asks, does your whole family play an instrument?
No. Actually, my parents are not musicians at all. They enjoy music, and the way I started playing the violin is that my mom is a sort of an amateur pianist. She likes playing a little bit, but she never played with anybody. She never made chamber music with anyone. So for some reason, which I still can understand, when I was 3 years old, she thought it was, you know, I was ready to start playing the violin. She got and bought one, and that's how I started.
Maybe because she liked music and wanted you to like it?
I think so, too. Yeah, she likes music, and she still loves music, and she tries to make it to all the concerts I play.
That's a good mom.
Very good mom. I owe my parents a great deal.
That's nice to hear. So when did you decide to make a career out of being a violinist?
It's not something that happened one day I woke up and I was like, oh, I'm going to be a violinist. It was more like it happened over time. And I realized, my parents said, you can do whatever you want to do. If you don't want to play the violin, that's fine. But I gotten pretty good at it, and I spent a lot of time and effort into it. And I liked it, so I saw no reason to ever stop doing it. So it's just something that, you know, gradually happened over time. I realized I don't really want to be doing anything else.
If you do what you love, you never work a day in your life.
That's very true. Yeah.
German Carr asked, what is your favorite style of music to play?
That's a good question. I get that question a lot. It's not something that I can answer very easily, because whatever music is put in front of me, I have to learn to enjoy it. And most of the music, even though I don't like it to begin with, I end up liking it by the time I have to play the concert. So I don't really have a favorite style of music to play, and there's a lot of wonderful music out there, and I don't want to exclude anything.
Gilsey Miranda wants to know who inspired you to play violin, but I guess you already got that question. Jack Eidnick wants to know, what was the first orchestra you ever performed with?
That was the Minsk Chamber Orchestra. That was in 1990, before the USSR was dissolved. I think 1989 even. And they came from Minsk and for former Soviet Union, and they came to Norway for a week, and I played the Vivaldi violin concerto with them. I remember very clearly, because I was so short, I had to stand on the podium in order for the audience to see me.
That's funny. Well, kind of that leads me into my question, which is, what is one of your favorite musical memories?
That's also a terribly good question. There's so many of them, but I have to say, one of the greatest joys I'm having is consistently having good memories with the Atlanta Symphony, and I really, really enjoy playing with them. And, you know, every concert, every rehearsal, there's something new that happens. I learned something new, and hopefully the other people in the orchestra also learn something new, and that's what really makes things interesting. And that's why I love going to play every day. I don't go to work. I love going to play.
That's wonderful.
I actually have a question for you. Have you ever had any hard times in your career?
Yeah, I think I definitely have. There's been ups and downs, but I think it's important to remember, you know, people can take away a lot from your life, but they can never take away your skills. They can never take away my skills of playing the violin, and no matter what happens. And, you know, bad things have definitely happened to my career. Good things have happened, but it's important to remember that your skill set, what you practice and what you work towards every day, nobody can take away from you.
Good advice. I'm just going to ask you, what do you like to do outside of music? What hobbies do you enjoy?
This surprises a lot of people, but I love computers. I build computers. I play with them, and I feel like I know a great deal about them. I'm I'm really into technology. I like technology a lot. When I was in Norway, and unfortunately Atlanta doesn't really have the same climate as Norway, I did a lot of cross-country skiing, and I was pretty good at it. It was a point where my coach said, you know, you can, if you want, you can stop the violin and you can do cross-country skiing for a living.
Wow.
Yeah, that was fun. Some of the people I trained with, I saw at the Olympics and the World Cups and stuff now, so that's a lot of fun
them
again. Yeah, but, you know, as a cross-country skier, you're going to have to hang it up when you're about 35, 40. So, and I was thinking when I was a kid, when I'm 80, I can still be playing the violin, so I chose the violin.
That's probably a good choice. More longevity there.
That's definitely true.
When you said that you didn't play any other instruments, I was wondering if it was like my oldest plays baseball, and he won't play golf right now because he doesn't want to mess up his baseball swing. So
it's a little bit like that. I tried the viola a couple of times, and it's a really, really nice instrument. And when you play viola and violin, it's easy to go from one instrument to the other. The C string on the viola is one of my favorites. Yeah, all violinists are secretly jealous of the C string. Remember,
well, I'm sure.
Remember that.
You can take comfort in that.
Yeah.
Confidence is key. did you ever travel like long distances? For concerts?
Yeah.
He came from Norway all the way to Atlanta. That's a long way.
Well, I came back from Hong Kong on Monday night. So
that
was a pretty long trip. Yes. It's 8,000 miles away.
Lots of frequent flyer points there.
Yes.
Do you travel a lot?
Yeah, I do travel quite a bit, yeah. And I like that. I like going to places, and I like going to places for doing something. I can't remember ever going somewhere for no reason, just because I wanted to go there on a vacation. I always go places and I play concerts, and I get to meet a lot of very interesting people that way, and I really enjoy it.
It's great when you travel internationally because you really get to see the world in a different light. So when I was in Sweden, I met some guys from Egypt, and you know what's been going on over there, and so then you see it differently as, I know people that live there.
Yeah, you get a great perspective also on where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. You guys have any other great questions?
Where do you feel most relaxed? Like in like mountains, beaches, like
in bed,
in bed at a place or?
Yeah, like you know, like I came back Monday night. I was traveling for about 24 hours straight. I was pretty relaxed when I came back, and I fell asleep in my bed. Yeah.
Home is your most relaxed.
Home is very nice. Yeah, it's always nice to be home. Yeah. And also in Norway, actually, maybe I'm even more relaxed back at my house in Norway with my parents. I grew up there my whole life, and the atmosphere there is very different than here. Norway is a country of 5 million people only, and there's not all that much going on. So it's a very peaceful country with not much traffic.
Traffic's not very fun.
Well, you know, the biggest road we have in Norway is 2 lanes in each direction. And so when you come here and drive, you get kind of confused because there are, you know, 10, 15 lanes in the, mm-hmm. in the road.
Yeah, give yourself the sign of the cross getting on the highway there. Definitely a different feel, yeah. But I guess there's never any place like home, you know, no matter where you come from. No. Home is home.
Home is definitely home. And it's nice to always go back home.
Do you get to Norway much? Do you see your parents often?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I go home to Norway and I play concerts pretty regularly, so I get to go home very often, which is very good for my parents. They always want me to come back home. And so, you know, whenever I have concerts in Norway, I get to see them. So I would say 4, 5, 6 times a year I would go back and I would play there.
I bet Christmases are fun at your house with you playing the violin, your sister playing piano, snow falling.
It can be very nice, yeah.
That's very nice. So do you think you're kind of a homebody when you're in Atlanta because you're either working or traveling, it sounds like?
Yeah, well, Atlanta is starting to feel more at home now. I mean, I lived here for a little over a year now, and in the beginning it was very different from what I'm used to. I lived in New York before I came here. But I'm slowly getting used to it, and I'm liking it more every day.
Very good. It takes about 2 years to start setting some roots, I think.
Yeah.
Even if you just move across town.
Yeah.
It's a totally different environment.
Yeah. Now, the people here are very nice, and the climate here is wonderful. My parents are very jealous. It's very cold back home right now.
Yes.
So I'm enjoying it very much indeed, yes.
The weather can get crazy. Yep. It was hot this morning, cold a couple of days ago, so...
Yeah, but it's never snow or, you know, cold like it is back in Norway. Mm. So That's nice. In the summer, it's too warm for me. I can't be here. It's too humid and hot. So humid. I'm usually not here in the summer.
Interesting.
Natalia Cuson asked you, what is your all-time favorite piece and who is your favorite composer?
That's kind of like the other question. I don't have a favorite piece or a favorite composer. I think anything that I have to play, I have to learn to like, because you're not going to be able to perform it well unless you like it and you at least try to enjoy it. So that would be my answer to that question, yeah.
So when we see the conductor waving his wand around, he's not just winging it.
No, he can screw things up big time.
Yeah?
And it has happened. So, yeah, he's very important, even though he doesn't make a noise. He's key to a good performance.
He's your master, you're the sheep.
Well, I don't know about
shepherd.
That.
I'm not.
No, not like that.
Robert Spano, the music director, likes to talk about the concertmaster as the shoulder of the orchestra where he can lean on. And I'm sort of often the middle man in between the orchestra and the conductor.
Yeah. So you're kind of over the whole orchestra or just the violin section as concertmaster?
Mainly the violin section, but often the rest of the orchestra also. Because, you know, if there's something the conductor wants to talk about, that's a problem in the rehearsal or something, he would often come to me first, and then I would deal with whatever
kind
the situation
is. Smooth things over.
Yeah, a little bit. I know everybody in the orchestra really well, and I get along pretty well with everybody, so.
That's great. Yeah. So do you have any advice for the listeners out there that might want to have a career in music, or just general, just good advice?
For me, what's important is that I pay attention to details. You have to pay attention to all the details, and when that adds up, you get a good product in the end. If you want to be a musician, that's key, really, because music is such a detailed language. And in order to express yourself properly, you're going to have to pay a lot of attention to them. But at the same time, it's important not to lose track of your big goals in life and where you want to be headed, because where you want to be headed is where you're going to make a good career.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to ask you what I ask all my guests is, what is your X factor? What is it about you that you bring to your environment that is unique to you?
That's a good question. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody can tell me. But as I said earlier, it's important to realize where you want to be going and work very systematically in that direction. I happen to like very much what I do, and that's very, very helpful, because to me, I don't work, I play, and it's called to play the violin and not work with the violin. So I think that's very important to remember, that you try to enjoy and find ways to enjoy whatever you're doing. Mm.
Do you have any, do you set goals for yourself, like a year out, two, five
yes.
years?
Yeah. I have very specific goals and plans, and sometimes I have to alter them, sometimes they change, but to have a realistic goal in mind, I think is very, very important, and work very systematically towards that is important.
I agree with you. It really helps to have clarity. You can end up anywhere if you don't know where you're going, right?
Exactly.
So if you know where you want to end up, then...
But also in music, sometimes you're going to have to, when I perform something, I'm going to have to realize I have to let go, and I don't know where this is going to lead me. You know, when I play a concert, spontaneity is very important. So I have to have, you know, both sides of the story. I have to incorporate into myself, and sometimes it can be difficult.
Mm-hmm. How long does somebody typically stay in one particular orchestra? Do they move around, or is it a lifetime typically?
That can be anything. We have a woman in the orchestra who's been there for 66 years.
Wow.
And we had people there that's been, you know, that are there for 1 year and they leave. So it's really individual up to where they want to be staying or if they want to move somewhere else or personal things. It can be really any amount of time.
That's fascinating. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So you guys have anything else you'd like to ask before we sign off?
Nope. I'm empty.
Okay. That's funny.
You're giving it all.
He left it all on the field here
for
you.
You're a true musician.
That's great. Well, it's been really fun talking with you, David.
Thank you for having me.
You're a gifted musician, and it was a pleasure to hear you, and we'll come back in May. So we appreciate you being part of Inside the Winner's Circle today.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. So this is Joyce Bone signing off. See y'all next time.